Blog Talk Radio.
No.
Hello, hello, hello.
I had to slow it down a little bit this morning on a Monday. Ooh, it is rough out there, people.
It is a little crazy. Just a little bit, though. Just a little bit.
Is he still complaining? Horace is still complaining. What? No show? No show. Honey, we're on.
I gave him a message.
He doesn't want to listen. You know Horace don't listen. Jay is saying it's about... No, that's Horace. I don't know which one of y'all is saying it. Ooh, it's just one of those mornings. Good Lord. I told you, as I said, all will be revealed tomorrow. Why this lateness?
Yay. Yes. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
I'm going to need your help with something later on. Okay. Good morning. Happy Monday to all of you. Yay. I got snow news ready, and I haven't eaten breakfast. I've been up since 5. That's not complaining. That's like, yes, I've been up and on it.
That is awesome. Well, I can jump in and grab one if you want.
Yes, while Christina serenades him in the background.
All right. Sony does it again. Oh, my God. Sony, seriously, what's wrong with you? GamePolitics.com this morning, Sony accidentally overcharged account holders' sales tax.
Yes, I love it.
All right, so apparently one of the readers who wishes to remain anonymous over at GamePolitics.com sent an email showing Sony Entertainment Network customer service on Friday saying that the company had accidentally overcharged themselves tax related to the period between November 18th of 2010 and April 11th of 2011. While his email noted that they overcharged him by 6 cents, we have seen at least one other email saying that the company overcharged a customer by $9.24.
Wow.
They say, we have asked Sony Online Network how widespread this overcharge is, but the company did not respond at the time. The company told those customers that these extra charges are the result of a mistake that modified some customers' accounts. The sales tax relates to purchases between November 18th and April 11th, which is a pretty large span of time to have these kinds of charges being applied to customers. On an account that is mostly inactive, this may be a minor thing, but on an active account paying for digital download subscriptions or making microtransactions, these charges could prove to be substantial.
Mm.
Wow. All right, so what exactly does the email say? It says, Dear Sony Entertainment Network account holder, after performing routine system maintenance, Sony Entertainment Network sales tax records were mistakenly modified, and some customers' accounts were charged sales tax in error. Between November 18th, 2010 and April 11th, 2011, one or more transactions originating from your account was charged sales tax in error. Correcting this, we will refund the errant charges back to your account in the amount of 6 cents via your Sony Entertainment Network wallet. This will appear in your transaction history as a one-time inclusive credit. We are diligently working to correct this error and will have your account refunded by March 31st, 2012. If you do not see the credit to your account by March 31st, 2012, or if you have any further questions, please contact our customer service department. All right, so people, if you have a Sony online account, make sure that they have not overcharged you somehow. I am going to be checking mine directly after the show.
Well, that is very interesting. I love how they said, we'll give it back to you at the end of next month. It didn't take you to the end of next month to take it from me, did it?
I know, right?
It should go back instantly. Why is it easy for people to take your money but never easy to give it back? What is that about?
I don't know. I think it's because they're stingy bastards and they should give it back.
I was worried about you and that word. I was like, oh, no.
I don't believe myself. I did good.
You did. Okay. What is going on with the tweets? Oh, my God.
We know, people. We know. We started a little bit late. It's all right. Tomorrow, everything will be answered. You will know the secrecy, the craziness. Why we're so excited. You will know. It's so awesome.
Ginger's going to spill the beans at some point. I'm just waiting. Ginger, don't do it. Don't do it,
Ginger. I'm not going to. No, I want the full effect tomorrow.
It won't be during the show tomorrow. It'll be before, but on the show we'll announce it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
All this stuff I hope to have prepared later
Yay!
On. Okay, so I got some charts for you.
You do? What do you got?
Well, you guys want to know what everybody was playing over the weekend or last week. So here you go. Final Fantasy was number 10. Number 9,
Yay!
Battlefield 3. Number 8, Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Number 7, Raven Origins. God.
You know you love that.
I found their card, by the way, in an old purse this weekend, and I just went, eh! Okay. So number 6, Syndicate. Number 5, Mario and Sonic London, 2012 Olympic Games. Number 4, FIFA. Number 3, FIFA 12, excuse me, let me be specific. Number 3, UFC Undisputed 3. Number 2, FIFA Football. And number 1, Uncharted Golden Abyss.
Oh.
And I want to say, I don't necessarily just hate Rayman. It's a good game. It's just...
Mm-hmm. You had to do it. That was your first game, and
yeah, I say that every week. I want to make sure that the developers know. I think you guys are brilliant, but just needs to stop it. Okay.
You may grab another. My turn.
Well, I got some interesting things about Twitter and the Oscars last night. Did you watch the Oscars?
Oh no, I didn't. I forgot you don't do TV.
Don't
have a TV thing. Yeah.
Well,
no TV, no Oscars.
Apparently, a lot of celebrities were on Twitter during the Oscars. What is that about? I think it's just too much interaction. Only we should interact. A post analysis from social media said it's starting to roll in, and it seems like the Oscars, while big, didn't manage to generate nearly as much conversation as the Grammys or the Super Bowl, according to Twitter. According to VentureBeat, I said according to Twitter. It says, they're not just using Twitter as an easy excuse to pontificate. Thank you. About current events, as Reuters has pointed out, big growth in social media engagement is one of the key metrics the show's producers will trot out when they're selling advertisements for next year's broadcast. So if talk on Twitter translates to cold hard dollars, how does the Academy stack up? Well, social TV outfit Bluefin Labs counted 3.4 million hashtag Oscar-related tweets, up threefold from the 966,000 they counted in 2011. Meryl Streep's big win and J-Lo's plunging neckline were the hot topics to chat about. But while all that sounds good, it pales a little when you compare it to the Grammys, which managed to pull in 13 million tweets, an astounding 2,300% growth year over year. The Super Bowl clocked in at around 12 million tweets. It was more... Tweets? Yeah. I got the outside adrenaline working. Okay, with more than 500% growth. Breaking down these numbers, is the bread and butter for firms like Bluefin, Trender, GetGlue, and Social Guide. How well this fledgling field works is up for debate. But Twitter analysis did a pretty great job of predicting the winners, nailing the best picture, actress, and coming within a margin of error for best actor. Maybe they'll start doing like The Voice next year and actually have someone that officially handles, you know, tweeting the Oscar tweets and making sure they put out information and stuff like that.
Oh, maybe. Mm. Maybe. Mm. All right. Oh, I'm lagging. There we go. All right, GamePolitics.com, because I love you people. Rapid Share throttles free users' feeds. Online file sharing company Rapid Share has apparently slowed down the connection of users who are not registered members. These free users have been complaining about reduced download speeds during transfers. Some users have reported speeds as slow as 30 kilobytes per second. RabbitShare says that the reason for this is simple enough. Throttling these users drives pirates away from their service. They claim that since the close of Mega Upload, they have seen a major uptick in traffic, and some of it is only interested in sharing and downloading illegal software. Critics argue that this is a heavy-handed way of driving free users to opt in to paying for the service. The company told Torrent Freak on January 19th, Mega Upload was shut down by the FBI. Shortly thereafter, several other file hosters curbed their services or entirely stopped their operations. RapidShare has been faced with a severe increase in free user traffic and, unfortunately, also in the amount of abuse of our service ever since, suggesting that quite a few copyright infringers have chosen RapidShare as their new hoster of choice for their illegal activities. We have thus decided to make a painful yet effective step to reduce the download speed for free users. We are confident that this will make RapidShare very unpopular amongst pirates and thus drive the abuse traffic away. The abusive traffic away. The company went on to say that this has some solutions for those free users who use RapidShare to support their websites and blogs. We know that through the action we've taken, we would even affect some Rapid Pro customers, especially those who offer their own files via websites or blogs and heavily depend on a possibility for free users to download their files. Therefore, we have decided to offer those customers a kind of deregulation that allows free users to download their files with the fastest possible speed again. All right, we kind of figured that this was going to happen. People are a little bit scared with what's happening with Mega Upload. I mean, hell, the guy got 50 years just for hosting a service. People using, not all illegally, but a good portion illegally.
This is just nothing but modern-day witch hunting.
It is. And they're not going to stop.
Well, okay, we're going to drown you, and if you float, you're innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't float, you're guilty. But if you die, either way, you were innocent.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. It's kind of very, very, very nuts.
Goodness, I'm going to eat my chips and be quiet. Oh, it's my turn, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It is your turn. Yes, it is.
Mm. Nom, 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 nom. I should not be eating chips for breakfast, but hey, breakfast champion. All right.
Wow. Mm. I had an apple and peanut butter.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
That's what I had. It was a hurried breakfast.
You see how Ginger's rubbing it in? I just came in. See, who loves you guys more? I came in here without breakfast and sat down to work. Or the girl who brags about the apple and the peanut butter. Who loves you more?
So good. Nom, 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 nom.
Well, you guys out there that love you some Facebook should know that Facebook is not the only platform. BigPoint CEO Heiko Huberts has warned the European games industry that while Facebook's recent creation of a dedicated gaming team for the region is good news, they should still explore other platforms, something we say all the time here. Facebook's entry into Europe can only be viewed positively for the European games industry, Huberts told GamesIndustry.biz. However, we would counsel the industry to not become blinkered. I love it. By this move by Facebook and decide that Facebook is the only platform to develop for. Although Facebook is a fantastic platform at BigPoint, we believe that it should only be considered as one route to market. BigPoint creates and publishes a number of successful browser games like Battlestar Galactica Online and operates a gaming portal as well. It recently passed the milestone for 250 million users registered. Facebook themselves say, as a gaming platform, they are only getting started, and so we would advise all European games developers to investigate multiple routes and platforms to give their game the best chance of success. He also added that the BigPoint team welcomed the news and the way it confirmed Europe's place as an exciting region for games development. He says it's great to see that all it's great to see that as well as companies like us are expanding into the U.S., U.S. companies see Europe as a must-be-in market. In particular, European companies have pioneered the high-growth area of casual and mobile gaming with a huge uptake by consumers worldwide, or take-up, you should say. Facebook announced the news last week that it will offer the region a dedicated team of engineers, account managers, and support staff, which they should have done a long time ago, but yes, he's right. Even here in the U.S., you all need to heed this warning. You should look for other avenues because you never know when Facebook will cease to be the new hotness. Tell you, the next Bill Gates, the next Zuckerberg, and all of them are already in their garage or now throwing straws at each other, but they're coming.
Mm-hmm. They are coming, people. You better be ready for them.
And as next weekend, they could just invent the next Facebook and just what then?
And then you'll find Ginger over there playing, yes.
I'm hoping it's somebody I know.
Yes. Ooh, somebody I can sit in the lap of and they can spoil me with new shoes. All right. Skejo Studios Operations Eradicate Now available on Apple App Store. Mobile game developer Skejo Studios. I'm probably saying this wrong, sorry. is pleased to announce its debut turn-based strategy game, Operation Eradicate, for iPad and iPhone, available Sunday, February 26th, which was yesterday. Right, so Operation Eradicate is a cooperative strategy game where the player controls up to four characters across the world to beat back the spreading infected hordes. With turn-based multiplayer matches of 20 different setups, three difficulty settings, it proves to be a unique and replayable challenge. Mobile game developers Geijo Studios is pleased. Oh my god, I already read that. All right. So, Operation Eradicate is a unique challenge, quick to learn with the in-game tutorial, and difficult to master with over 20 different possible character setups and three different difficulty levels. Forethought and a bit of risk-taking is needed to navigate this game of resource management, location, and timing. Travel across the world, fight the hordes, and launch counter-strikes before the infected hordes spread across the before the infected ones spread across the planet. Operation Eradicate also comes with the ability to match with friends in turn-based matches through Game Center, as well as racing up the leaderboards and scoring achievements. All right, so I have this up on GameAndMatrix.com this morning. If you'd like to head over there and check that out, I've got links and all. Go see it.
You know what would help if I wasn't muted? Every day. Ginger, are you muted now?
No.
You didn't respond. I'm like, can she hear me? Oh, you're laughing muted, huh? You see how we are? Interesting. Okay. Okay, just so you guys know out there, Blitz Games Studio is hiring technical artists and multiple levels art roles. If you are an artist, pop over there, tell them that we sent you. And if you are looking for a job or want to post a job, make sure you drop by our job boards. We are linked in with a very vast network of people, so your job will get out to many. And you should find great jobs via our jobs boards. Yay! Okay, now my browser is deciding it wants to freeze. So, yay, the fun to
yay.
Be had.
Do you want me to grab one?
You're going to have to because I'm all frozen up and stuff. It's ice coming down onto the monitor and everything. And
oh, that's no good. All right, I can do it. Federal appeals says encryption court orders are a violation of the Fifth Amendment. A federal appeals court has concluded that a Florida man who refused to decrypt several electronic devices and was subsequently imprisoned had his civil rights violated. This is the first time an appeals court has ruled in favor of protections for encrypted devices and software. The court ruled in the United States versus Doe that the man's Fifth Amendment rights were violated. The FBI seized two laptops and five external hard drives from a man that they were investigating but were unable to access encrypted data they alleged was on the devices via an encryption program called TrueCrypt. When a grand jury ordered the man to produce the unencrypted contents of the drives, he invoked his Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. The court found him in contempt and sent him to jail. The EFF filed an amicus brief under seal, arguing that the unidentified man had a valid Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. An FBI decision to force him to decrypt data was unconstitutional. The 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed, saying that the act of decrypting data is testimonial and therefore protected by the Fifth Amendment. After all, you are not compelled to testify against yourself in a criminal trial. The court also said that the government's limited offer of immunity in this case was insufficient to protect his constitutional right, because it did not protect him from the government's use of the data as evidence against him in a prosecution. Wow. All right. So the EFF senior staff attorney, Marcia Hoffman, says the government's attempt to force this man to decrypt his data put him in the catch-22 the Fifth Amendment was designed to prevent, having to choose between self-incrimination or risking contempt of court. We are pleased the appeals court recognized the important constitutional issues at stake here, and we hope this ruling will discourage the government from using abusive grand jury subpoenas to try to expose data people choose to protect with encryption.
Wow.
Similar case in Colorado, a woman named Ramona Fricosu has been ordered by the court to decrypt the contents of a laptop seized as part of an investigation into fraudulent real estate transactions. The EFS says that they have filed a friend of the court brief in that case as well, arguing that Fricosu is being forced to become a witness against herself. An appeals court recently rejected her appeal, and she has been ordered to decrypt the information this month. That's not cool, people. That's not cool at all.
You're going to want to cut, Horace.
Oh, yeah? What did he say?
He says, you're reading like you're Helen Keller.
Oh,
on the Crucible. Like you're Helen Keller in, on the Crucible. I'm going to duck and cover.
That's no good. You know what? Yeah, as soon as I get this Twitter, where's my Twitter? Oh, my Twitter! Oh, you just wait, when I get my Twitter open, you are so dead. Why did my Twitter close? What is going on?
Because Firefox has been crazy the past few weeks since they keep doing all these updates.
I just had it, and like my screen skipped, and now it was gone.
Are you on Firefox?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm using Chrome.
Well, then I got no clue, because I know Firefox is crazy.
Something is technically wrong. You think?
I'm sorry. You've experienced an error. Please try again later. When later? Please try again later. When later?
Mm-hmm.
I love when it just says try again later. I didn't want to tell you anything. All right. I do have some other news. Oh. Congratulations to one Mr. Robert Griffin III. Yeah, him. Yeah, Robert Griffin III. He was named as the NCAA Football 13 cover athlete, and therefore will be breaking something pretty soon, because you all know how this goes. If you're on the cover of any EA games, it's just over for you. But EA announced that Robert Griffin III, former Baylor University quarterback, will be featured on the cover of EA Sports NCAA Football 13, set to hit retail shelves on Tuesday, July the 10th. In addition to RG3, a fellow Heisman Trophy winner will appear on the cover of NCAA Football 13 based on a fan vote. Beginning March 13th, fans can log on to the EA Sports NCAA Football Facebook page to vote for one of 8 Heisman Trophy winners to accompany Griffin III on the cover of NCAA Football 13. The candidates include former University of Southern California running back Marcus Allen, former Boston College quarterback Doug Flutie, I know that clearing my throat was not an endorsement of anybody. Former Ohio State University running back Eddie George, former University of Michigan wide receiver Desmond Howard, who's very cute, former Oklahoma State University running back Barry Sanders, yay, and former University of Georgia running back Herschel Walker, former Florida State University quarterback Charlie Ward, former University quarterback Andre Ware. Hi, Andre. Okay, so the first student. He's the first student athlete from Baylor to win the Heisman Trophy, and he's popularly known as RG3. He also won the Davey O'Brien Award and was named the Associated Press College Football Player of the Year last year. In 2008, he was named the Big 12 Conference Offensive Freshman of the Year by the league's coaches, setting the school's rushing yards record for a freshman and for a quarterback with 843 yards for the season.
Wow.
Congratulations unto him.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
All of our guys that are football fans listening are like, stop saying it. I already know all this. Get to the part where we get the game. You don't. You have to go out and buy it. He's got nice arms. He's a little thin, but he has got nice arms. Oh, I'm sorry. Was I saying that out loud?
Yes. Yes, you were. Wow. All right. So what have we got? Sign Mora has a release date and price along with the Deadly From Dust to Dust trailer, which I have up on GameMatrix.com. All right, so the high-flying diesel punk shmup is right around the corner and blasting off March 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Sign Mora, the highly anticipated shmup from Digital Reality and Grasshopper manufacturer coming exclusively to Xbox, we'll be heading to Xbox Live Arcade Gamers everywhere on March 21st for just 1,200 Microsoft points.
Ooh, just 1,200. Ooh.
Yes, just 1,200. Sign Mora caters for all the audiences with its varied levels of challenge, but one thing is for sure, regardless of the difficulty level it is played on, everybody will discover plenty of ways to be obliterated in the game as shown in the latest trailer from Dust to Dust. All right, so if you head over to GameMatrix.com this morning, no, it's not up yet. It will be up in just about 2-3 minutes, so check that out.
All right. Oh, is it my turn already?
Mm-hmm.
Ginger, you're moving way too fast for me this morning. You do know we got 40 minutes left.
Oh, good God.
Yeah. You best slow it down, sister.
I'm not trying to. It's just I'm on the ball. I had my apple. I'm good to go.
What did y'all do to Ginger while I was gone? Y'all did something to her.
It's good. It's so
good. Oh, I'm just typing. Look at me. See, I'm not all there yet this morning. Okay.
Yes, wow. And yes. I'm all sneezing. So, yeah.
This is not a good day. Okay, so to friend or unfriend, that is the current trend according to VentureBeat.com this morning. People out there are friending and unfriending people all over Facebook. Yeah, a growing percentage of people are wishing or are wising up to the consequence of willy-nilly friending and status update posting. The Pew Internet and American Life Project, which serves 2,277 of you adults over 18 and over out there, determined that two-thirds of people online are using social networking sites, but these folks are also now more likely to correct their past friending mistakes. Wow, I'm sorry. 67% of American women and 58% of men who maintain social media profiles delete people from their network, according to Pew's findings, published Thursday in a report titled Privacy Management on Social Media Sites. Altogether, 63% of adults have deleted friends, up from 56% in 2009, and 44% have deleted others' comments from their profiles. Privacy appears to be the new preference of social media denizens. The majority of social network users,
good, about time, people,
which is about 58%, have set their profiles to private, and just 20% of adults said their profiles remained public. Women are especially keen on privacy. 67% of women compared to 48% of men set the highest privacy restrictions for their profiles. Men, however, are twice as likely, 15% as women, 15% as women, 8% to regret posting a comment. Yes, because y'all don't think before you speak. Social network users are becoming more active in pruning and managing their accounts, Pew concluded. So, well, it's some interesting comments. Some people are saying, Melissa Maples over at on the VentureBeat site is saying she's a musician and a photographer, and her deleting people isn't always about privacy. It's about getting rid of people who whine and complain about their petty dramas all the time, or worse, never stop talking about their religious or political opinions. I got to say, I agree
with her. I'm sorry. Sometimes you just got to go, you know what? I'm tired of your shit.
Oh, Ginger, daytime. Oh.
My bad.
Oh, no, Ginger.
I didn't mean to. We got to push
our news up a day.
It was an accident.
Well, some of you out there are not being private enough, especially like the stupid guy that got caught marrying somebody else on Facebook and his wife found out. How are you that stupid that you would post it on Facebook? That's what I'm trying to understand. You were wrong either way it goes, but you were stupid enough to post your wrongness on Facebook. Ginger, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Do you know it be's your turn?
I am staring at a spinning screen, and I'm getting very annoyed. All right, maybe my other one's going to work. Hold up.
Wait, I was ready for just such an emergency.
I'm sorry. I was trying to save the dust image, and, like, my whole thing decided to just...
Well, everybody should be happy to hear this one. The violent games bill, you know, up in Oklahoma? Just throw out.
Yeah, I heard about that. That's so awesome.
Yeah. Now that mine is spinning, I can't read it. Come on. There's something going on with the internets or something. It's got to be. Or there's a conspiracy, a conspiracy against us today.
It's got to be something because this is ridiculous. This should not be this hard. Oh, my goodness.
And
all right.
The next backup story.
No. I got it.
You got the Oklahoma one?
I don't have the Oklahoma one, but I thought I had it. It was with GamePolitics.com the other day. I read it the other day.
The Oklahoma story?
Yeah.
Why didn't you stop me before I got all invested in it?
Well, I thought maybe you had something new.
My screen be frozen now. I can't get out of it.
All right. Well, it's my turn then. UK Pirate Party, AXA will kill people. Kill them. Kill them dead. All right. So, all to the anti-trading trade agreement, AXA, that we've heard, the United Kingdom's Pirate Party might have come out with the most outrageous one yet. AXA will kill people. But it is really all that outrageous. Sorry, but is it really all that outrageous when you consider how it would affect generic drugs? What? All right. So criticism of ACTA has often focused on the harm it will do to the internet, but that doesn't address one of the most important issues that ACTA presents: the fact that it will kill sick people in developing countries by denying them access to affordable generic drugs, whilst doing nothing to address the issue of unsafe counterfeit medications. This is coming from Phil Hunt, the UK Pirate Party's foreign policy spokesman. Wow, you guys, y'all are hot. Y'all keep talking like that. All right, so Medicine Sans Frontiers, I think that's Medicine Without Boundaries, has been expressing their concerns ever since the very first drafts of the treaty were leaked, and they have reiterated their concerns at the latest draft, saying that it will have fatal consequences on access to medicines. He goes on to say that border seizures of generic drugs would multiply under ACTA, and strong punishments will deter the production and trade of generic drugs. This should be more than enough to force governments and unions to rethink their stance on ACTA. It is time that the international community came together to deal with intellectual property openly and transparently, taking full account of the impact on developing states, innovation, and civil liberties across the globe. We cannot sacrifice human lives to the interest of the rich world's IP monopolist. Thank you. Oh, my God. I hadn't even thought about that, but they've got a point. This is not cool, people. And that they're doing this in private. Oh.
Yeah, that we have, you know, no say-so. And I say we because people, what is it, that there's some certain Christian groups that hate the whole idea of a world government because that means the devil has come in. But I hate to tell you, EA is the devil. It's already we're all citizens of the world, unfortunately, and if they pass ACTA, the next thing they're going to do is look this direction. What is with my voice every day?
I don't know.
I need you to stop it, Texas weather. Let me breathe and stuff and speak. And my screen is still spinning. How about that?
Oh, fun. All right, well,
I got nervous again when you went to the F word.
I'm like, no, don't say it. I'm not going to. Just don't say it. Don't do it. Look at that little girl. Y'all see this? She thinks I'm so awful.
No, I just know you got a mouth on you, chick.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I got one, too. It's okay.
All right. So teammate Tony Ressin is frustrated with WiiWare game size limit. All right. So teammate Tony Ressin as frustrated with the size limit developers have to adhere to when making WiiWare games, but is happy with the increased size limit game developers are under for the 3DS eShop. The limit for developing games for the 3DS marketplace stands at 2 gigabytes. It's an interesting contrast and explains why the WiiWare market has been a wasteland for most third-party developers. WiiWare's 40 megabytes is horrible, but the 3DS eShop's 2 gigabytes is reasonable, says Refiniz in an interview with the Nintendo Gamer. Super Meat Boy has been on WiiWare, would have been on WiiWare if we could have just had a few more megabytes of space. You can only compress stuff so much before you have to start cutting off huge parts of your game. Unfortunately, at that point, it just isn't worth the time. Despite the restrictions of past platforms from Nintendo, Refiniz still has a strong interest for the new Nintendo platform. This weekend, we'd like our next game to be on the Wii U as well as everything else. Team Meat has been an outspoken advocate for indie developers trying to get their games on console platforms and isn't afraid to argue about it in the public square. Ruffin is railed against Xbox Live Arcade at GDC last year. And they should. That whole thing that went down with Xbox Live was just wrong. All right. So screen's still spinning?
No. There's some other good stuff going on. Oh, gosh. Firefox. Internets. I'm not happy with you all today. Anyway, Playhaven has launched what they call Zynga in a Box. This is their mobile game monetization platform. They are a real-time mobile marketing startup that has enabled a fourfold increase in app purchases for its game developer customers. It is adding new monetization features that will help make developers even more money. So we start picking out who we're going to, you know, sit in lap. Monetization features use analytics and user segmentation to help developers target their best customers with offers that can generate more revenue over the life of the audience member. The company is pitching the features unofficially as Zynga in a Box, since like Zynga does on Facebook, they make actionable analytics available to developers as conveniences. The offers can be changed on the fly in real time to get the best results. The new features are being added to Playhaven's existing in-game marketing platform, which works by adding an HTML5 layer on top of games, which can run in a native format on the iPhone. The layer dubbed a dynamic overlay is something that developers can easily tweak themselves. That's important since they don't have to wait for Apple to approve a submitted update. If the developers want to change a feature for a user, for example, they can do so instantly. Such real-time offers are much more effective, resulting in higher user response. He says you can dynamically change what you show the user at any given time without interrupting the game. This is Chief Executive Andy Yang. He says publishers can now take control of this completely. With the monetization features, Playhaven can help game companies maximize profits by segmenting and managing customers. The tools can then generate real-time metrics and insights that are actionable. Yang said that these features can help sort customers into batches of minnows. Oh, we're fish.
Minnows?
Who can be monetized
with
ads. Well, I guess
it's better than sheep.
Yeah. We just eat mindlessly if we're minnows. We can be monetized with ads, but never have
sheep
to pay for
better.
Anything. Dolphins who are regular customers who come back often, and whales who make huge in-app purchases. Playhaven says it's...
Well, I don't think I want to be called a whale.
It says it can help convert users to pay via upsell and cross-sell tactics. Wow. Anyway, if you're interested in learning more about this, you can pop over to our people's... what's their website? Playhaven.com, I believe? Yeah, playhaven.com.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and check it out. I need y'all to be referring to us as animals, and not nice animals either. We don't want to be...
Wow. That's not cool. Stop. No, that's a good way to get slapped.
You guys are talking about slaps on Twitter. No more Charlie Murphy with James slaps.
That's hilarious. All right, so what have we got? Sugar Cube Bittersweet Factory released, but it will not be sold in Korea. All right, so Sweetest Hero Sugar Cube is doing sweet protest against shutdown policy and cooling off policy by Korean government. Korean indie team Turtle Cream released first commercial game Super Cube Bittersweet Factory, but they decided not to sell it in Korean territory. Oh, that's a good snub. Turtle Cream is a Korean team, but they will not sell their products in Korea. Bear with me, people. This is very badly translated. There is sad reason like this. Apparently, yeah. According to Korean language option in game, Korean government has a review screening policy for games, including free ones. They have made a shutdown policy and cooling off policy for juvenile protection. We disagree with the government, which considers games as social evils such as drugs. We will not make any games in Korea until the Korean government gets rid of these policies. So the shutdown policy is made by MOGEF, M-O-G-E-F, Ministry of Gender Equality and Family. According to the shutdown policy, game companies must have the system that minors can't play after midnight, and a cooling-off policy by MEST, Ministry of Education, Science, and Technology. According to the cooling-off policy, game companies must have a system that early teens can play only 4 hours a day and only 2 hours per one play. According to these two policies, our Sweetest Hero can't be played in Korea territory legally unless it supports shutdown and cooling-off. So the Turtle Cream has decided not to sell their game in Korea. I don't blame them. They shouldn't be forced to change their game because parents cannot parent their children. So I'm backing you, Turtle Cream, as bad as that sounds. Turtle Cream. Nom, 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 nom.
All right. I'm listening thinking Turtle Cream is very odd.
Yeah, I want to know what kind of cream this is exactly because, yeah, my brain hit the gutter.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened here. Yeah, y'all have me worried. Turtle Cream. Where would you get a name? Yeah, I'm going to move
on. I don't know.
I'm moving along.
All right, let's move along. Moving right along.
Ginger's like, she's ready. Let's do this. Okay. Wait a minute. What happened to my story? Oh, God. Firefox, why do you hate me today? Why does it hate me? Ginger.
I don't know. I don't know. Is it being around?
It is.
Open up another one. Yes, I will.
No,
yeah,
I'm good. I'm just like, why do you keep?
I don't work. You know, Firefox and Chrome both have been terrible, horrible little.
Exactly.
Not nice words. I can't say on air
during the day anyway.
See, y'all are getting me irritated, and then my southern accent comes out. So
we like your southern accent.
Stop doing this.
Yes, my folks, it's Monday. Okay, so those of you who were wondering about the new iPad, yes, more rumors abound, it's highly likely that it's coming, although we've told you. Best Buy has currently dropped the price of the iPad 2 by $50 on all models today. So the timing of Best Buy's sale may be another indication that the world's most valuable company is getting ready to announce the iPad 3. The iPad 3 is rumored to be released on March 7th, as VentureBeat shared with us. This doesn't necessarily mean that an iPad is definitely coming, but it would make sense for Best Buy to try to clear its stock of iPad 2 sitting on the shelves at retail stores. Others like Walmart, Target, and Target continue to sell the current model iPad at regular price, $479 to $799, which might be because they have fewer in stock. The new iPad is expected to have some nice upgrades over the previous model, including a newer and faster quad-core A6 processor. Ooh, I love it when you talk to me, baby. It's supposed to have high-resolution Retina display, an improved camera, and possibly LTE 4G ready. The iPad 3 is also rumored to be about 1 to 1.5 millimeters thicker. It doesn't need to be thicker. You need to get thinner, people. Since you're killing people to make them, you might as well go all out.
I know, right?
Jesus.
All right. It's my go?
It's your go.
See-Through Studios, woohoo, invites you to visit the Polygon Noir World of Flatland Fallen Angle. Fallen Angle? Yeah, Fallen Angle.
Angle?
Yeah, I thought it was Angel, but no, Angle. All right, so with a tinkle not unlike the sound of shattering crockery, See-Through Studios today launched their inaugural game, Flatland Fallen Angle. Inspired by the 1884 novella Flatland by Edwin Abbott, Fallen Angle is the noir-esque tale of an isosceles triangle on the run from the law and hungry for revenge.
Oh, God, yes. It's a math game. Mm-hmm. Isosceles triangle. Very nice.
Very nice. All right, so over 10 astonishingly two-dimensional levels, the player must negotiate the various neighborhoods of Polygonometropolis. Oh, my God. And use three angles to slice, splinch, and shatter anyone who gets in their way. Built in just 96 hours, over 3 weeks, Flatland Fallen Angle was conceived as a way to prototype the See-Through Studios development philosophy, make games fast, no working. And this development has been accompanied by a smorgasbord of behind-the-scenes images, videos, and words, including a series of development diaries by somebody I'm not going to mention, along with a number of beta releases. All right, so if you head over to GameNatrix.com in just a minute or two, I'm going to have this up for you. You can check it out over there. Yes, you can. And Corey's all quiet?
That's because I'm muted and cussing at my computer. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now? I forget, you don't watch TV, so you don't get that joke, do you?
No, that's that.
Yeah.
Telephone.
Yes, let it go. Let it go. Walk away.
I'm trying to crack my brain. I can't.
Well, ironically, the same day that Facebook is offering to give Europe some lovely help over in the region, there's another study that came out that said the Facebook gaming boom is over. The Facebook gaming boom is on the wane, according to Europe.
Oh my God! I'm like, really?
.net. Yes. This is according to a new report from industry analyst IHS Screen Digest. As detailed by VentureBeat, Screen Digest argued that user numbers are stagnating. They're stagnating. Development costs are increasing, and competition is becoming ever more fierce. The report claims that while the number of Facebook gamers soared in both 2009 and 2010, there is very little growth seen in 2011. It added that about 50% of Facebook's used the social network to play games in 2010, but that figure fell to around 25% in 2011. To illustrate this point, Screen Digest claimed that monthly active users for Facebook game giant Zynga fell from 266 million to 225 million, and it looks like the next 12 months could prove just as challenging for developers. Screen Digest reports explain that Facebook's clampdown on game message spam means that it will be harder for new titles to get noticed without a costly marketing campaign, especially as there are more games than ever vying for the subscribers' attention. As a result, established developers will have to focus their efforts on keeping what customers they do have. But with gamers expecting higher production values, this could also prove costly. Facebook skyrocketed to prominence as a gaming platform in 2009 and 2010, This is summarized by Screen Digest games analyst Steve Bailey. However, with equal speed, the market then settled into a state of maturity in 2011, with conditions becoming markedly more challenged for game operators. While Facebook remains a worthwhile opportunity for companies to meet these challenges, the tone of the market in 2012 will be somewhat muted compared to the optimistic outlook of the past few years. So, doesn't look that good for you, Facebook. They're either going to have to, more quality games, which I don't see really happening due to the fact that, Facebook games seem like they could only do so much. We run across one every now and again that's good. What was it that we were playing for a while? The Dragon Age Facebook game was really good. And they were well designed. They thought about, it tied into the actual Dragon Age, so you could do, you could do stuff on your cell phone. You could craft things on your cell phone. So very, very nicely done. But those types of games don't tend to get a lot of attention from Facebook gamers. You all just want to play Cafe World. I'm sorry, I lost interest in watching Fruit Salad.
Yes, Rez. I don't blame you.
Rez, and yes, I use the term Rez. Watching Fruit Salad Rez, I got bored.
Oh, uh-oh.
What?
All right, so we were talking last week about the whole Apple versus ProView thing.
Uh-huh.
ProView's coming to the U.S.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Uh-huh. ProView takes iPad fight to a U.S. court. ProView Electronics has opened up another front in its war against Apple, the iPad name, in the United States. The company that is suing Apple in China over the use of iPad brand in China has filed an additional lawsuit in the Superior Court of the State of California in Santa Clara. The lawsuit filed on February 17th alleges that Apple committed fraud when it used a front company, a law firm called IP Application Development, Ltd., to purchase the iPad trademark from ProView on December 23, 2009, for £35,000, which is $55,000 USD. ProView and its U.S.-based subsidiary ProView Technology said in its court filing that by acquiring the iPad trademark through IP Application Development and not explaining the true purpose of the license, Apple acted with oppression, fraud, and/or malice. An Apple spokeswoman told the Wall Street Journal that it had legally purchased the iPad name from ProView, adding that ProView refuses to honor their agreement with Apple in China. The Hong Kong court has sided with Apple in this matter. According to the filing, ProView obtained the iPad trademark in several countries sometime in 2000 for an internet appliance called the iPad. While that product never materialized, the company still holds the trademark. ProView has asked the court for damages to rescind the early agreement for the iPad name and to stop Apple from using the trademark for its products. Good luck with that, ProView. I don't see that happening. Good try.
All right. So what does that mean? Do they drop their suit or?
What do you mean?
So weren't they and Apple fighting over copyright infringement and all that? So does that mean it's done, over with?
No. They're now bringing it here to the U.S., to the U.S. courts, because in China sided with Apple. So now they're hoping that they can come here to the U.S. and have them stop. They're hoping to show that Apple bought this and didn't release why they wanted it. So they could have, I think it's an actual thing for more money. I think if Apple had just paid them more, they'd shut up.
I know, you can pay me for my silence if you like there, Apple.
Yeah.
And I know stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely knew about Skype, didn't we? We kept them out.
Our internets are already acting up to just.
It's done now. It's done. Good.
Yes, my gag order was lifted, but I'm still keeping quiet just in case. Oh, that reminds me. Congratulations. They're going to cut me, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Congratulations to my lovelies, Chloe Brown and Eric Neustetter, on their nuptials. They got married over the weekend. If you don't know who they are, you should. Better known as Kitty and E. You've heard me mention, Ginger's heard me mention it before. You all haven't. But congratulations on your nuptials. This is kind of like.
Congratulations. Many, many, many happy years to you.
You think of them this way. If Microsoft was a royal court, then they are like the Duke and Duchess. There you go. Duke and Duchess Neustetter. Congratulations. I love you. Okay. Now on to not so happy news. I should have done the good news last and say the did the bad news first. But we lost one of our own again.
Oh no, what happened?
But he lived a very long life. Mr. Steve Kordak, who was the inventor of pinball gaming. And some of you are like, what the hell is pinball? Well, go into some of those old school arcades. You know those big machines that have all the lights flashing and you have to use your hands to push it on the side. You put money in it. And it has flippers. It's not digital. That thing is a pinball. It has a ball in it that, you know, okay. Okay, so he passed away at the ripe old age of 100. He actually passed away last week.
That is a nice old age.
That's a nice old age. He passed away in February of the 90s, actually, according to Time. He designed the two flipper pinball machine, a standard that remains today, even in digital versions of pinball, and built over 100 pinball games during a very vast and influential career. Kordak took the six flipper design popular in the 1940s and reduced it to two. His game Triple Action wowed fans upon its 1948 Chicago debut, revolutionizing pinball gaming. He then added direct current power to the flippers so a ball could be skillfully and somewhat accurately flipped from the bottom of the playfield to the top. Kordak also invented the first drop targets and multi-play ball. His best-known games include space race-inspired space mission, an auto racing game called Grand Prix, which would eventually become Pole Position and all those other ones.
Muted.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know, what did it become?
And the poker-themed Pokerino. The poker-themed Pokerino he also did. His final ball game not long ago was called Vacation America. It was made in 2003 and inspired by National Lampoon's Vacation movies. Steve's impact, according to VentureBeat, and the New York Times, would be comparable to D.W. Griffith moving from silent films through talkies and color and CinemaScope in 3D with computer-generated graphics. That's what Roger Sharp, the author of Pinball 1977, A History of the Industry, told the New York Times. He said he moved through each era seamlessly. And if you pop around on the internet, you can find some pictures of him next to his pinball machines. And I love that he has on this 80s shiny, you know, the jackets you used to wear in the 80s.
Oh my god, yeah.
And he's an older guy even then, but he's got on his 80s shiny jacket just standing next to his pinball machine. So lots of pinball for you in heaven, and we'll see you when it's our turn.
Yes, though I have to say I'm not going unless there is internet and midget porn.
How you guys are going to hear about the midget porn and you're going to be like, oh my god,
it's going to make so much sense.
No, it's not. It's not going to make sense.
It might.
It will not. It does it now, but you'll at least
that's
hear.
That's just because you don't understand the midget porn. That doesn't mean they're not going to.
How do you understand the midget porn out there? Please send us an email, webmaster@gamermatrix.com or gamergirlsradio.com, and tell us if you are obsessed with midget porn.
As I am, yes. All right. So, what have we got?
Shame.
Dungeons & Dragons Online Minutes of the Underdark to launch on June 25th. Players can pre-purchase the first major expansion to the award-winning MMO starting today. Warner Brothers Interactive and Wizards of the Coast announced today Dungeons & Dragons Online Minutes of the Underdark, the first expansion to the award-winning free-to-play massively multiplayer online role-playing game, which will launch June 25th of 2012. Players across North America and Europe can pre-purchase Minutes of the Underdark to receive exclusive benefits starting today. And I've got a link, but I'm not going to give it to you. I'm going to make you go get it over at GameNatrix.com. All right, so what do we got? We've got three Forgotten Realm adventure packs featuring a multitude of epic adventures, unprecedented new wilderness areas with challenging objectives, a host of dungeons, and more. We've got the King's Forest, the Underdark, and the Demon Web. Attain epic levels to 25. And we've got introducing epic destinies. Attain epic enhancements as you progress through levels 20 to 25. Bonus features free to VIPs or with purchase of collectors or standard pre-purchase editions is a Druid class, Evening Star Challenge Pack, Minutes of the Underdark Base Edition, Minutes of the Underdark Standard Edition, and a whole bunch of other freebies, and you can go see them all over at GameNatrix.com this morning. Head over there and check them out, people.
And what if I don't want to?
Well, then you don't get to see all the awesome coolness.
Well, I never. And I won't. All right, so there's some new technology on the rise, augmented reality. Not just the ones on your cell phone, people, but, you know, those augmented reality games that we talk about. But Total Immersion is the name of the company that's doing this. They're releasing a new racing game demo that shows off the tools developers can use to create augmented reality games. With the Diffusion tools, developers can create games such as racing titles that exploit a computer's webcam to superimpose a helmet on your face. And you can use a faux steering wheel, which you can hold in front of the webcam to drive your car, so your gestures make it feel as if you're driving on a racetrack system. For more than 2 years, Paris' company, veteran of the demo conferences in 2004-2007, has been delivering augmented reality experiences like this to developers, who in turn can launch games for consumers. Bruno Yuzan, who's a chief executive of Total Immersion, and said in an interview that the new Diffusion tools enable immersive new applications in augmented reality that can be integrated with Unity Technology's 3D game engine. He said augmented reality is gaining a lot of momentum from marketing advertisements to integrations with toys. Kind of toys you're talking about here. He says we're using to track faces.
She brought that up, not me.
Hey, I don't know what you're talking about. It can detect movements that can deliver much more immersive gaming experiences. He said our goal is to bring augmented reality to everyone. To create the racing game, the company had to develop much better face tracking technology than it had before. The inputs from the system had to be integrated into the graphics rendering engine created by Unity. Total Immersion was the latest vision for Unity technology at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco next week. The Total Immersion AR Formula One game, developed by partner Inside Studios in Rennes, France, will run on an Intel Ultrabook, which has both gesture detection and a webcam that can track faces. Ooh. Total Immersion now has more than 6,000 developers using its Diffusion platforms, and it has more than 100 partners around the world. The company has raised $12 million in three rounds and become profitable in 2010. More than 1,300 projects, including an interactive Tic Tac branded billboard in Times Square. Have been released in the past 2 years.
You drink tea, you don't breathe it.
Total Immersion has 90 employees. Yuzan, who's the co-founder, co-founded the company with Valentin Lefebvre in 1999. And there is actually a trailer of the demo up on their YouTube channel if you go and type in augmented reality racing game demo. And while it is not super top-notch, it's pretty amazing considering, you know, what it's supposed to be. I've been waiting on this for the longest time. I want to say I met Total Immersion at like E3 back 2005. And if it's not them, it's another amazing company that's probably going to be rich pretty soon. But they would put the little things on your head, and you would control the game with your brainwaves. Yeah. Wait a minute. I got to read this one because we're getting ready to go, and I must talk about I don't know whether to be offended or what.
What's going on with this one? Because I was looking at a ponycorn thing, so.
Oh, Lord. Okay, apparently there is a Plant versus Zombies tournament. It's supposed to be aimed at the girl peoples. It has been revealed
My flowers will kick the butt of flowers.
It was revealed by Feel Good Games. The tournament will include PopCap casual hit games like the aforementioned PVZ, along with Bookworm and Zuma's Revenge. Oh, I know a certain ex-Microsoft employee that is going to be all over that with the curly hairs. Trixie, this is your tournament. of course, we all... wait a minute, let me jump down here because this just came up, so I didn't get a chance to pre-read this one. According to Graham, the custom-made PVZ tournament edition is based on the Walnut Bowling minigame from the full game. So the tournament round takes 3 to 5 minutes to complete, so folks not familiar with the game can get up to speed quickly. Players need to last through two waves of approaching zombies and earn points for knocking over zombies with their walnut bowling style. The farther from the house the zombie is when hit, the higher the score. Zuma's Revenge and Bejeweled 2. Oh, my cousin's going to go nuts for that. With their straightforward score are already available to play tournaments, Plants vs. Zombies will go live next Thursday. Many tournaments can be created by site members and have entry fees up to 25 from 25 francs, euros, or whatever, to 250.
The prize pot seems to consist of all entry fees, with top five scorers able to receive a portion of the winnings. There's also a jackpot tournament created by the site itself, which lasts for a longer period of time and have a larger winning amount. Isn't that gambling?
That's definitely definitely sounds like it.
Well, I guess the reason why they're able to get away with it is Feel Good Games is based in the United Kingdom, is a community of women gamers. The company's research shows that its target demographic, women in the UK, 25 to 44, wanted a game-centric website with an actual community where they felt like they belonged. So we'll be popping over to harass them, and so should you. Tell them that we sent you. Their current site contains quite a few casual games to play for free. All registered users can win rewards, currently coupons for household goods, magazine subscription offers, like you send to other friends on the site. Yeah, that's what makes it like blah. Feel Good Games comes from the same team of folks that put together a gaming site targeted at young UK men called Mousebreaker, showing an experience with the type of social gaming site they've put together. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got about 3 to 5 big ones left. You got one you can squeeze in there, Jen?
I just might. All right, PonyCoins developer Untold Entertainment announces graphic adventure ward puzzle mashup game.
We made a
Delirium. I don't know. I think they're just using the name to. I think they're just using the PonyCoin name to gather.
Ooh, I see a lot coming if they're borrowing her game name.
Yeah. All right. So Untold Entertainment today announces its upcoming Spellirium, a unique graphic adventure word puzzle mashup in the spirit of Puzzle Quest, Challenge of the Warlocks, and Bookworm Adventures, equal parts Loot and Bottle. Spellirium takes players to a post-apocalyptic world called The Land, where present-day civilization has been buried beneath a mile of earth and reading and writing have been outlawed. Enter Todd, an initiate in the secret society of the Rune Keepers, who assembles a motley crew of companions to investigate the death of his monastic brother. Todd's journey unfolds across a pastoral countryside dotted with salvaged wreckage from the once, giving the game an eye-popping trash punk aesthetic. Spellirium cleverly leverages a fun grid-based word puzzle game mechanic against story-based puzzles for ever-changing, always challenging gameplay. To shear a sheep, spell words like cut, trim, shear, and clip. To defeat a green foe, spell words using only green tiles. Spell words in different directions to move a character through a maze. All of the words the players spells are stored in an interactive dictionary or Pokemon list of 50,000 collectibles. Words can be used as currency to buy items, which can then be crafted to make power-ups. All right, so Spellirium will be available as a downloadable title for PC and Mac. Partially funded by the Ontario Media Development Corporation, Spellirium is currently in alpha testing and is slated for a 2012 release. All right, yeah, so I don't know about that, but we'll see. But the main deal that they're talking about is that Untold was apparently the company who released Sissy's Magical PonyCoin Adventure. So that's where the
Sissy. Okay, so they're the ones who released the game, so now they're going to capitalize on her name. How sick.
Yes. Very, very.
Y'all better be giving her some of that money.
Mm-hmm.
Without
Sissy,
nobody would know who you were.
Exactly.
I hope her dad's following up with this.
I hope so, too. It's ridiculous.
All right, guys. We're out of here.
We're gone.
Tomorrow. That's good stuff. Good news.
I can't wait.
She's not nice.
Y'all better tune in tomorrow.
See you guys tomorrow.
Later, boys and girls.